Okay, this is Space Kate, and I am down in the depths of Portland State University. I've come in to sit in on one of the PSAS meetings, that's Portland State Aerospace Society, and I'm having a day learning about rockets, so I thought I'd come along, and there seems to be a motley crew of all sorts of people hanging around, talking about very complicated things, tapping away at laptops, and having arguments about orbital trajectories. With me is Andrew Greenberg, who's a project manager. So, there's basically all I can see here is a bunch of guys and computers. But you actually build rockets, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We try. Anyway, on a day-to-day basis, we're actually mostly in front of our laptops, like you would expect. We've got solid model stuff going for the airframe. We've got CAD for the electronics and the avionics. And on a day-to-day basis, we're working on the sort of the more of the thought stuff. On the weekends, we try and get out and actually build rockets. And maybe one day we'll actually have a real rocket lab. As a student project, it's hard to get lab space.
So I guess my first question is why? Why do you do this stuff?
Well, we have a joke about this, which is actually true, which is undergraduate engineering labs tend to be deadly boring. Not just boring, but like your eyeballs bleed boring. And frankly, if it can't kill you, it's not interesting. And so we thought, you know, let's do a project, right? Now, we're a bunch of space geeks, and so we thought, well, what project do we want to do? Well, everybody and their brother wants a webcam in space, right? So we decided, let's put a webcam in space. I mean, how hard could that be? And so we thought, okay, we'll build a rocket that could put a webcam in space, because we were all naive idiots, but that's how all good projects start. We started building it, and again, it was just really exciting. It's the most exciting engineering project we'd ever done. It integrates mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, computer science, you name it, it's all together. And so we all like hard projects, because that's what you like when you're an engineer. And so this was sort of the ultimate hard project for us. And, you know, I can throw on the buzz phrases like systems engineering and interdisciplinary project management, whatever. But the most exciting thing is it could kill us. and actually, you know, going back to the labs thing, it's way more interesting and exciting to actually build something that works, that has to integrate with everybody else's work, that, you know, has a purpose than an engineering lab. We've learned way more doing this project than from the undergraduate labs.
I mean, it's interesting what you say about labs being really dull. I mean, I did a science degree, not a physical degree, I have to say. I was in the softer sciences. But I found my labs pretty boring as well, which is a shame, because I came out and decided I didn't want to be a scientist.
Yes.
And then, you know, in the last year, actually, I've got excited by space stuff. I've had the chance to go out to the desert with some people from Ames, NASA Ames, and they were out there exploring, doing stuff. And I was like, wow, this stuff is really cool. What is it about educational institutions that somehow manages to suck out the fun? And what could they learn from groups like yours in teaching the subjects that they do?
There's actually a big movement afoot right now, and I am proud to say that it's happening at Portland State, which is that the labs are being upgraded into what I would call project-based labs. So, you know, we make jokes about the labs, but they're actually getting better. And the problem is it's that the last, you know, 200 years of engineering education, or 100 years, however you want to call it, has been about, you know, trying to mimic the physical sciences and trying to mimic, you know, arcane 19th century forms of education. And the reality is now, if you want to get people excited and actually learn stuff, you give them a project to tackle that just happens to be about what they're supposed to learn too. And so I think it's just inertia. And I think fairly slowly the universities are learning, okay, if we really want to engage students and have them be better engineers, we need projects. We've gotten a shocking amount of support from the engineering department here because of that, because we've got Emmys. We're the only project that's got Emmys and EEs working together.
Sorry, Emmys, EEs.
Mechanical engineers and electrical engineers. And the idea there is that, you know, it's so much more rich to be working. You know, when I'm an electrical engineer, right? So, like, I don't care what size or shape my board is. But then when the mechanical engineer comes over and hits me over the head because it doesn't fit in the rocket, you know, then, okay, I have to worry about that. And then we sit down and we talk about heat transfer. I don't care about heat transfer. But, you know, we have to worry about that. So now I have to design my board for heat transfer. And now he has this other problem where he has to, you know, ditch the heat that I generate. But then, you know, the computer scientist comes over and she says, no, we can't do this because I need more computational horsepower. So I need a bigger processor. And, you know, and so we're all working together. And then that's the kind of, you know, so anyway, so that it's, I think it's changing that towards that kind of thing, but slowly.
And your group here, it's not just students from the university, is it? It's open to anybody who wants to come along and join in.
That's right. We started it here as students, and we continue it. Unfortunately, Portland does not have a very large aerospace community, and there's no aerospace department here, or in Oregon, anywhere, actually. And so we sort of started our own. And what we found is we found that the space people kind of came out of the walls, if you will. And we've got lots of people from local industry, from Tektronix, from Intel, from small companies. We've got people who have no engineering knowledge who are just interested in space. And they come out and they give us a hand. And two or three times a year, we go launch rockets together. And yeah, it's based out of PSU, but there's lots of other folk, too.
And one of the things I've heard about your group is that you are very much an open source group and you want to be able to share the stuff that you're learning with other groups. How does that work when it comes to rocket science? And are there other groups in the country or around the world that you're actually working with and sharing ideas with?
Let me talk about the open part and then I'll talk about the collaboration part. The open part is because we got so frustrated with having to build our own stuff. It was just very, very clear that other people should be building rockets. We should use their designs and launch them and put our webcam in orbit and then we'd be done, right? We've been done years ago. But no, we are designing it ourselves and there's nothing open out there. And one of the things that we found out was that while we were starting to write ground telemetry software and we were talking about operating systems for our computers, we ran into Linux. And then we ran into the computer science people. And the computer science were all buzz about Linux and open source. And we realized, you know, this is really an educational project. It should be open. And so we were one of the first espousers of the open hardware thing way back in 2002. And the whole idea is, you know, let's put everything online and then people can use our stuff. And in fact, what we'd like is collaboration. What we really desperately want is for someone who's very excited about one narrow slice of the rocket, like, for example, antennas, to come and help us.
Is that a cry for help there?
Yeah, that was a cry for help, because I'll give you an example. We are going Mach 3, and at Mach 3, if you put an antenna outside the rocket, it rips off. It's not so good, right? And so we thought, okay, we'll make cylindrical patch antennas. We'll put the patch antennas on the outside of the rocket. Well, if you buy cylindrical patch antennas, they're $20,000 a pop. Well, we can't afford that, it turns out. That's too many pizzas. And so we decided, well, how hard would it be to design our own? Well, it turns out it's really freaking hard. And so we wasted like a year of our lives designing cylindrical patch antennas, which now cost $200 a pop. And so factor, you know, 100x price reduction, which is not bad. And now they're open source on the web. You can download the Excel spreadsheet that designs them for you, and you import them into a CAD program, and you get them made, and you're done. And for example, you know, we would love to work with people whose passion is antennas. Another thing we're interested in is aerodynamics. We need aerodynamics people. And so we would love to collaborate. We've actually worked a little bit with Brigham Young University and another student group in LA, I forgot which school you go to, and a couple other groups. And we try, and you know, our big expertise right now is avionics systems, and so we try to help people out as much as we can. And of course, the website's open and the wiki's open. You can go grab stuff, and we would love to collaborate.
Now, just as you opened the meeting, I heard you talking about trying to get a kilogram into orbit. That's quite a lofty ambition. How do you think you're going to manage to do that?
Well, we have catchphrases, right? The first is, how hard could it be? And the second is, we need three things to get to orbit: big rocket, lots of lawyers, and a navigation system. The whole point of this rocket is as an aerospace educational project. We're working on the technologies of it. And that's what we're focused on. We haven't focused necessarily on the big rocket part or the lawyers part. And so I think what we need actually is some rather rich dot-com millionaire to come in and give us, you know, $500,000 or something like that. Let us leave our day jobs for 6 months to a year, probably longer, that's optimistic, and finally build this big rocket and talk to the lawyers and all that kind of stuff and get this thing off the ground. At this point, we're focusing on the low-cost avionics part of it. And so when we hope that those two things come, the lawyers and the money and the large rocket come as we actually build this avionics system and launch our small rocket. In fact, that's part of the collaboration, is once we have the guidance and navigation control parts of it down, we hope that we can essentially bring our system to somebody else's rocket, and they've built the big rocket, and they've got the lawyers, you know, all that kind of stuff. We're not proud. We'll take big rockets and lawyers.
But it does seem to be the holy grail, though, getting something into orbit.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't say that before, I'm sorry. The whole purpose of our group is to get that kilogram into orbit, get that webcam broadcasting on 802.11 down to the ground, and say we did that, and be the first non-governmental, non-large corporation entity to do that. Essentially amateurs.
I was going to say, I mean, you've got people like NASA and ESA and JAXA who can all do that.
Sure.
And now you've got commercial companies like SpaceX that are managing to put things into orbit and bring them back. They've got pretty huge budgets.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the commercial, maybe slightly less than NASA, but they've still got a lot of money to play with. What's your sort of average yearly budget or amount of money that you want to spend to get your kilogram into orbit?
Well, okay, there's two different questions. Our yearly budget's like in the thousands of dollars, and that, you know, which is ridiculously low. We are looking for grants right now, and we're looking for funding, and we're, you know, approaching other folks to get funding. The reality is it will take hundreds of thousands of dollars and years of work to get a single launch of a kilogram into orbit. And we have several advantages. One is we're only going for a kilogram. And so it turns out that the rocket scales, you know, non-linearly per kilogram you get into orbit. And no one's been stupid enough to make a rocket that only puts a kilogram into orbit, right? So it's very small rocket. That's our first good thing. The second thing is we don't necessarily care if it explodes, because, you know, we're kind of working out the bugs on smaller rockets. And of course, SpaceX, when they have a multi-million-dollar launch, they have to make sure it doesn't explode, which means it's a much more $100 million launch, you know, kind of thing. And I hesitate to use the word agile and small and other buzzwords like that. But that's where we hope we're going with this. So we're hoping, and we've got some preliminary figures to support this, that we're under the $1 million mark. Someone needs to give us, you know, $500,000 or something like that, and give us a couple of years, let's call it, and we think we can do it. And because we think the hard part, which is the navigation and control and stuff like that, we've got a pretty good handle on. And even on the nanosatellite itself, which is just a little avionic system itself. So.
Now, I'm pretty new to all this space stuff and rocketry in particular, but one of the things that I've heard mentioned is the dreaded ITAR, the International Treaty on Arms Regulation. And as I understand it, rockets fall under that in quite a big way. How does your group that's launching things up into the air cope with the ITAR regulations?
Well, let's bring up that whole collaboration thing again, because one of the things we need collaboration with are pro bono lawyers.
Is that another cry for help by any chance?
Oh, why yes.
You're so subtle.
Thank you. I'm known for my subtlety. The short answer is we don't know. The long answer is it's either going to completely fall under ITAR, and the GNC part of it will not be able to be an open source shared project, which would be disappointing and sad.
GNC guidance?
Guidance, navigation, and control. So the flight computer and the control system and maybe the fins on the first stage and the cold gas jet to steer it on the second stage, whatever systems that we're developing now couldn't be open. Or they could be open source, but only for U.S. citizens, and that's a little hard to control. And so it becomes closed, and that would be sad. And so we're trying to find out what it means to be an open navigation system. We hope that as an educational project that is doing nothing new, it's all been published in books and things like that, that we don't fall under ITAR. And so far we know that we don't, because we haven't done any real control besides roll control. But this coming year we'll be doing, you know, sort of three-axis control. And at that point, we will need to know whether we fall under it or not, because then we'll have to rejigger our project. We'll have to bifurcate it into the open, fuzzy bunny, this is the rocket thing, and the closed, you know, no, this is apparently a missile thing. So, and we just for the record, a lot of people do ask us, well, if you're building a rocket, aren't you also building a missile? And the answer is no. I mean, a kilogram to orbit is not a big rocket, and it's not a particularly good missile either. And it's sort of like, it would be like someone building their own, you know, like, so we publish all this on the internet, right? And so couldn't a terrorist group grab our designs? Sure, they could, just like a car bomber could build their own Indy F1 race car and put a bomb in it and go blow something up. It's kind of ridiculous. It's not worth it to use ours. But on the other hand, if the terrorists are sitting there debugging the Linux kernel and figuring out the latest, you know, TI power amplifiers, it might not be a bad thing. You know, it turns out they wouldn't be building bombs, so that'd be all right.
Now, I've asked you a few questions about the group, about open source, and thrown in one about ITARP. Now I've got a difficult one for you. Okay, I'm looking around this room, and how many people? Well, a few have gone home now, but there were, what, about 30 people here earlier? I didn't see a single girl in this room apart from me. So where are they, and why don't you have them in your group?
That's not a hard question. That's a really good question, and then a question that makes me very, very angry. I teach a little bit at PSU, one of the things that is so frustrating as an engineer is that it is so amazingly male-dominated. And I don't necessarily mean, you know, that's forced, but I mean the sense of where are all the women. I think I get to blame our educational system. I think I get to blame the fact that if you ask 10-year-old and 13-year-old girls, they tend to be excited about cool things and some about technology. But by the time they're like 15 or 16 or in college, they're not there. And it's like there's this big switch that gets thrown at that age. As an engineer, it's something that concerns the hell out of me, because I think that that's a huge missing problem. We actually had all like five of the women electrical engineers on this project like 3 or 4 years ago, but then they graduated. you know, there are just not that many of them. That's why they're all men. I hope that educational reform around the world brings more women in. And I hope that this project-based education that should go all the way back to elementary and high school also brings in more of the sort of people who are on the edge, you know. And I think also it's helping that computers are and electronics are really deeply integrating into our lives now. One of the things I have a lot of hope for are things like the Arduino project typically women-centered technologies, I say that with air quotes, sorry, like fabrics and things like that. You know, there's the Arduino Lily Pad. There's this idea that you can integrate electronics into your clothes. And, you know, it turns out for, you know, adolescent girls, clothes are a big deal, and so that makes a big difference. And so you can start to integrate these kinds of technologies into their education and, you know, into their lives. And I kind of hope all that brings up more and more folk.
So I guess this is my call for help. Please, girls of Portland, get yourself down here and get involved in this project, because space is really cool, rockets are really cool, and you could be part of building it. And, you know, you could, I don't know, teach these boys a thing or two, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely.
So if they do want to get involved, how can they find you on the net, or what do they do? What do they need to do to come and be a part of this project?
There's two things they can do. The first is go to our website, which is psas.pdx.edu. The second thing they can do is show up at a meeting if they're in Portland or the surrounding area. We meet every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock in Portland State University's 4th Avenue building, or FAB. And we welcome new people. We'll give you a quick introduction. If you're not remote, we also have a bunch of mailing lists you can join, but we'd ask you to contact us first. My email address where you can contact me directly is Andrew, A-N-D-R-E-W, @psas.pdx.edu.
That's great. Thanks ever so much for your help.
Oh, thank you.